So based on the text, I'm going to say that the country is full of two types of people, angry landlords, and then people who are famous locally for various pies, scones and cakes that they learned from Mary Berry books over the years. So everybody has their Mary Berry classic that they that they're renowned for. Brendan, I love Mary Berry since I discovered her in the 70s in a magazine called Family Circle. I waited patiently every month for her recipes. Her apple cake has made me famous. Try it, Brendan, you won't be sorry. Well, Anne in Port Leash, I'm not coming to Port Leash to try the apple cake, so the mountain will have to come to Mohammed, but I'm sure I won't be sorry if I try it. Just one more here from Polly in Galway. My grandmother, an immigrant from the UK to South Africa in about 1940, discarded the avocado flesh and boiled the pip for about 5 hours. She couldn't understand why it wouldn't grow soft. And look at us all now, we're avocados coming out our ears. Now, I'm joined now by Professor Niall Moyna from the School of Health and Human Performance in DCU. So if you've eaten all the Mary Berry, you'll want to be moving a bit as well. Niall, you're welcome.
Good morning, Brendan.
And Niall, we needed to check in with you really because the cold and the dark coming in on us now, and the temptation is to kind of hibernate and start eating carbs and Mary Berry cakes and everything. I suppose it is natural we'll want to slow down a bit at this time of the year, isn't it?
Well, look, I'm not too sure if it's natural to slow down, but it's because of our environment, our climate, our short days, lack of sunshine, we tend to hibernate is probably the correct word.
Yeah.
And probably the people who will suffer most from the hibernation are the elderly. Those who are older, say, than 50, because they lose it very quickly and they find it harder than in the spring and summertime to get it back again.
Okay.
Whereas younger people are more robust, more resilient. And they tend to move more anyway during the winter months. But for people over the age of 50, it's extremely important that they maintain the activity levels that they gained over the spring and the summertime.
Okay. And you would actually say that it can be a good time to start exercising if you're self-conscious or that, to get out there in the darker
evening.
Yeah,
look, there are a number of factors that motivate people to exercise. I get called from a lot of people, and it's very interesting that a common thread is that in the wintertime, a lot of them begin the exercise program, particularly those who are overweight, because it allows them to go out exercising in the dark and no one sees them, which is quite amazing, you know. But if that's what gets you out exercising, and again, I keep using this term, maybe we should say moving rather than exercising.
Yeah, yeah.
If that gets you moving in the wintertime, whatever it takes, away you go and do it.
Yeah. And look, for a lot of people, moving is going for a walk. Any tips on getting out there as the autumn and the winter come in?
Well, look, first of all, people would say, oh, it's Ireland, it's cold in the wintertime. We don't have an environment, have extremes in temperatures. The average temperature in the wintertime is 4 degrees. It's 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So for most people, just putting on one extra layer and maybe if it's a little bit colder, gloves, good socks and a hat.
And you warm up fast anyway.
Because the body produces lots of heat. But I think coming back to the whole nature about this movement, there was an excellent paper published this month, two papers, where they took 80,000 people in Wales, Scotland and England, and they asked them to wear, this is 80,000 people, to wear an accelerometer for a week. Now, an accelerometer is a small device you wear on your belt, and it calculates the number of steps that you take during the day and how often you're inactive. And what this allowed them to do was to classify the steps into those that were incidental. So puttering around the house, around the office, coming from the car into the office, that was between 0 and 40 steps a minute. So that was classified as incidental. And then the other was purposeful steps. You were going for your walk with your dog, or it was purposeful. This was your exercise for the day. And they looked at a number of diseases, dementia, cardiovascular disease and cancer. And they found that if you did 4,700 incidental steps, that's just puttering about the house a day, your risk for all-cause dementia decreased by 42%.
Really?
That is staggering. That is staggering. And for every 10% increase in incidental steps that you took per day, you got a 10% decrease in death from cardiovascular disease and 6% from cancer. They're the two leading causes of death in Ireland. So it's staggering. I don't think there's any.
So you don't even need to get out for the walk. Just keep moving around the house.
All steps count. And now we have this thing at the moment. We know that up to 10,000 steps, you get added benefits. You get tremendous benefits up to around 10,000. It's a bit like after 10,000, it's not really worth all the effort. You might feel great about doing the extra steps.
When you look at your device and you get 23,000 steps a day.
This is wonderful.
Sending pictures to your friends
and people think that's wonderful. But after 10,000, the benefits are minimal. But up to 10,000, for every 2,000 step increase, up to 10,000 steps, you get a 10% decreased risk of dying. That is absolutely huge. So the take-home message here is these incidental steps, it's more likely that people can achieve this. That's an achievable goal for 95% of the population in Ireland.
Okay.
Just puttering around the house, out to the garden, instead of taking the car down to the shop to get your paper in the morning, just walk down, walk back, and all of a sudden you accumulate your 5,000 steps for the day.
Okay, and can you build in some other stuff around the house as well?
Yes, I mean, I think particularly as we get older, younger people are a lot more robust. I know people would probably laugh at this, but you know, I've suggested this in the past. There are the other component of exercise in addition to cardiovascular fitness is our muscular strength and endurance. And if we don't maintain that, we will reach what's called a frailty threshold, where someday actually you won't be able to get up off the chair to go to the bathroom or to make the kettle or to walk up the stairs to bed. And it hits like this. So maintaining our muscle mass is extremely important. So for example, if you're boiling the kettle and you had a little note on the wall beside your kettle, squats, lunges. So even if you just do 5 squats while you're waiting for the kettle to boil, that adds up over the course of a day. Whether it's doing a push-up against the wall or against the door, any form of resistance exercise that can maintain or improve your muscle mass is extremely important. And just to show you how quickly you lose it, there was a study done on 72-year-old men, and they asked them to reduce their step count from 6,000 steps a day to around 1,400. In 2 weeks, they lost 4 kilograms of muscle.
Whoa.
Their ability to increase muscle after taking a protein-rich meal decreased by 26%. So as we age, if you don't use it, you will lose it. And those simple at home, people may laugh at it, but they will maintain you don't have to go to the gym. You can do simple exercises at home. Obviously, those individuals with orthopedic limitations, I would highly recommend you go to see a medical professional before, you know, commencing an exercise program. But these simple home-based exercises will allow you to maintain your muscle mass.
Okay. Tell me about you're big into the metabolic stuff and the metabolism. Tell me about METs then and that measurement and how that works.
It's we tend to throw out these terms. People have to get 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a day. And people don't know what that means. So as you and I sit here right now, we're consuming what we say 3.5 milliliters of oxygen for every kilogram of body weight that we have. We refer to that as one MET. So if I go out and exercise at 10 METs, I'm exercising at 10 times my resting level.
Okay.
So sitting right now is between 1 and 1.5. If I'm puttering around the house, that's between 1.5. I'm consuming oxygen at 1.5 to 3 times my resting level. We refer to that as light intensity activity. That's your incidental steps. Everyone can do that. And then it's recommended that as adults, anywhere between the ages of 18 and 70, that we get 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week. That's exercising between 3 and 6 METs, or 3 to 6 times your resting rate. That's walking.
Okay.
So it's achievable by most of us, although as we age in Ireland, there's a dramatic decrease in the number of people who achieve the minimum target per day.
Okay, so they're just not doing it, they're not moving.
Yeah, and I think the message I want to get out this morning is any movement is beneficial. You will get the benefits. And the other very, very important point about moving is this thing that every time we exercise, there's two benefits to exercise. There's the acute effect. So if you go out and go for a 30-minute walk, immediately for the next 18 hours, your blood pressure decreases, your immune system improves, your insulin sensitivity improves, there's less fat in your bloodstream, and you lose that then gradually over the next 18 hours. So you go again and you get the benefits. We refer to that as the acute effect of exercise. And also, obviously, you get tremendous improvements in mood and how you feel.
Yeah.
Then you have the chronic effects. That's if you do it regularly, the body starts to adapt. You have more blood, you have a bigger heart, you can transport more oxygen, you have stronger muscles. So the exercise that was very, very difficult at the beginning now becomes so much easier. So walking up that hill, you can walk up the hill now without being out of breath because your body has adapted. Your various organ systems in your body have adapted to that chronic.
Back to habits.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Listen, in terms of walking then, for people who are able for it and out for a good walk, sometimes you're in to go for a walk with someone and they're ambling along and you're thinking, this is completely pointless. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we should be striding out, like, at a pace, getting the blood up and stuff, presumably, if we can, yeah?
Well, look, not particularly. I think there's two ways of looking at that. The higher the intensity at which you exercise, so the faster you walk, yes, you're going to get more health benefits if you walk faster, but they aren't that much greater.
Really?
No. It's an extra 10, 15% if you want to put in all the effort. And also, you made a very important point there. You go out with a friend. Like for millennia, for the 40,000 years that we, the Homo sapiens, have been on the earth, we went out and hunting gathered up until 150 years ago every day. And how did we do it? We went out in groups. We were together and they spent most of the day walking, taking around. Men would walk around 12 kilometres, women 9 kilometres every single day. But this was in groups and walking in groups. And we see it particularly in the wintertime when you see Operation Transformation. You've all these people in yellow vests in the community. They're all meeting at the corner. That is wonderful because there's a sort of a social contract when you decide you're going to go out with a partner or a friend. And they say, oh, can I meet you at 10 o'clock in the morning? Well, you more or less say to yourself, I better get my backside out of bed because you made a contract with another individual. And just, it makes it a lot more fun. You know, if you're out on your own every single day, now some people like being on their own, but being in groups makes it a lot more enjoyable, regardless of the intensity of effort.
Yeah, and presumably you're not relying on your own willpower either, which
is fine, isn't it? And you know, obviously the most important thing is to make movement fun. That you like doing it. There's a reason doing it. Now, it could be, and I'm be sexist for saying this, but it could be two women out there talking about all the issues in the world and all their problems. And all of a sudden, 45 minutes goes by and they don't even realize it compared to going out on your own. So I would, for those who don't normally exercise, try and find a group of like-minded people. Join it. It will transform your life.
Yeah. And I'd say for older people as well, because, you know, I'm always on about this, but you see them on the continent. Old fellas out together, hanging out. They might be ambling around. They might be playing dominoes or whatever they do like. But for old people to get out in a group like that, they're much more likely to get out of the house and have a walk.
Exactly, because it's any form of movement. And I think that's the important point. In fact, just that you say that, there's a programme coming on RTE in January called Super Agers, produced by Donal Maloney. Now, I've seen some of it.
Yeah.
These are for people in their 80s, 90s. My God, it'll blow your mind away.
Okay, without giving it all away, what's the key to superaging?
Physically active.
Yeah.
And living in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mean, I was asked, you know, when I saw them, my initial reaction was full of life in their 80s and 90s. And that's what I call ideal aging. Full of life, enjoying the moment and having the physical capacity to be able to do it.
Yeah. For the hardcore walker, you have a suggestion about a kind of an intermittent kind of walking?
Yeah, we hear this term high intensity interval training. It's thrown around out there all the time. And people think, oh, I've got to be an athlete to do high intensity interval training. That sounds very, very difficult. But if you start a walking program, maybe after 3 weeks, what I would suggest is that every 4 minutes, you look at your watch and say, I'm going to walk as fast as I can for 30 seconds.
Okay.
Take a 4 minute rest, do it again. That's high intensity interval training. And it breaks up the routine because I'll tell you this, your 3 minutes and 30 seconds of recovery
will be the fastest
3 minutes and 30 seconds. It goes by so quickly. And all of a sudden, and before you know it, you're walking a minute and then you can start jogging. So there's lots of ways to make walking exciting. And you can decide, I'm going to walk up a hill, you know, during it. The goal could be to walk up a hill after 3 months. And it's amazing how the body will adapt at any age, whether you're 70, 80 or 90 years of age.
Okay, now, there's a lot of people texting in, right? And there's a good few people asking about injuries. So someone with hip arthritis, how can I get fitter and build up muscle to help me? Can't swim at the moment due to muscle tear. Can you ask the professor how to exercise without injuring yourself? Don't say stretching. I do loads of that. I don't overdo it either. I'm a mild exerciser, but the last number of years I've been getting plantar fasciitis and other muscle strains.
Yeah, I think they're very, very good questions. I'm not a big stretcher myself and I don't particularly believe in it. A huge part of the issue is that we don't have the functional strength in our muscles. We have weaknesses in our muscles because if we walk every day or run or swim every day, we're not particularly strengthening our muscles per se because it's aerobic in nature. And I think as we get older, because back to what I said at the very, very beginning, if we can increase our muscle, our hamstrings get weaker, our quads get weaker, it's maintaining that strength because if you lose the strength in those muscles, it does predispose you to injuries.
Okay, so if you're out running all the time, that's not enough. We need to be doing a bit of like some form of gym or...
Correct, resistance exercise that overloads, that stresses the muscle. So you're going to increase muscle mass. That's what's there for both your upper and your lower body. You will lose it in your lower body pretty rapidly. So it's very, very, you know, a really good example as you age is running to catch a bus when you're 60 and all of a sudden you're out of breath. And the reason for that is all of our muscles are linked to there's a nerve attached to every muscle. So your fast twitch and slow twitch. If you don't use your fast twitch fibers, which you use by lifting weights, that nerve then pulls off the muscle and you lose the ability to contract that fast twitch muscle fiber as you get older. So it's important that we do resistance training to be able to use those muscles throughout our lifetime.
People say half an hour twice a week is enough resistance, is it?
Perfect, yeah. Absolutely perfect. Or if you, every time you boil the kettle.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And listen, if you just did those squats, which I'm still not sure I know exactly how to do a squat, but I mean, it's, people will be able, able to find it there, and we might get you to do a squat and put it up maybe. But if people just did squats, lunges around the house and everything, that's enough resistance to be getting on with.
And push-ups, back raises, you can do it. You can do a leg bridge for your glutes and your hips. These are all simple exercises that most people will be able to do.
Okay, yeah, we might take a video of a squat during the ad break and stick that out. What else now? Do you recommend trackers and stuff like that? I find they give you a good prod, a bit of encouragement.
If it motivates you, and that includes me, it's wonderful. But don't get consumed by them. You know, this, oh, I've got to get 10,000 steps, I've got to get out tonight, and I've got to get there. You know, don't get consumed.
Yeah.
Use them as a motivating tool. It's much better to use them rather than the total number of steps. It's better to use them to give you a reminder to get up every 40 minutes and walk for 2 minutes. That's far more important than actually achieving the 10,000 steps.
Yeah, but I think you're saying to have a healthy relationship with the tracker. Yeah. I presume as well, like, getting out in nature it adds to the whole vitality of all this, doesn't it?
Yeah, for those who are lucky enough, you know, to be close to nature, you know, for us cultures that grew up in the countryside, you know, it's just a different world. To go into a park and the greenery in the park and the chemicals that are released from the trees, et cetera, et cetera.
This is all scientific,
is it? This is all scientific now, clearly showing that there's a link between your physical and your mental health and exercising in a green environment. Extremely important. And if you look at all the concrete jungles that we have here, I think, to be fair, there's a big push now globally to try and sort of restructure our environments to make it more user-friendly and more green spaces that will induce people to get out and to be more physically active in green spaces. But if you're close to a green space and you've young kids, get to the green space and play there.
Okay. Texter here says, I jog up and down the stairs in my house. I suppose the stairs is a ready piece of equipment there for us, isn't it?
Climbing is the most strenuous exercise.
Really? Yeah.
If you want to burn calories, you keep going up and down
the
stairs.
So up and down the stairs a few times.
Yeah.
Female here, 50, doing a few push-ups from the floor today, part of yoga. Will I always be able to do it if I keep doing three times a week? I notice a lot of guys now getting into yoga and Pilates and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I'd highly recommend it if you can afford it. Definitely. It's a wonderful way. Obviously, you'll feel a little bit sore after the first or second session.
Okay.
After that, it totally dissipates. That's called delayed onset muscle soreness. You won't know yourself. Your posture, your ability to perform activities of daily living will improve dramatically. And even the lady that just called in there, even if you're starting off and you're a female doing push-ups, do it standing against the door. Then when you do 30 or 40 of those, then go down onto your knees. You don't have to do the regular push-up. You can work your way if you take maybe 6 months to get there.
So on your knees, on the floor, just pushing up.
Knees or just standing and back and forward against the door.
And against the wall. Okay. Listen, there was a study out in the last few days. Actually, I think UCC were central to it. Saying that the hip to waist ratio is the more accurate way of measuring obesity than body mass index, which does make sense. Body mass index makes no sense.
Look, body mass index is great where you have large studies with 40, 50, 60,000 people in it. You know, they're wonderful because obviously if you're a large person like a rugby player, most of them are an elite Gaelic football player. A lot of them would be classified as being either overweight or obese because of the BMI. It's your weight in kilogram divided by your height in meter squared. So, you know, it's not really a good indicator. Whereas the waist-to-hip ratio really indicates where, if that's increased, it means you're carrying extra weight around your midsection, and that is responsible for a lot of the chronic diseases that affect the modern world at the moment.
Okay.
So I think it's a much better.
Okay. And listen, is there a specific way of asking for a friend here? How do we get, like, it starts creeping up and up that middle there as we get on. It's sugar, somebody told me, is the key to it.
Well, there are lots of theories out there. Obviously, carbs are one of the reasons. It does become more difficult, but you won't lose it through exercise. That'll be part.
Yeah, okay.
It's reduced caloric intake and obviously some form of exercise.
Okay. So would you be, you know, we were very down on carbs for a while and then people kind of came back around or whatever and said, no, calm down. Would you be down on too many white carbs? Is that part of the problem?
I've taken the view now, I'm in the middle of the road view. I think you have the extremists on both ends. I think you've got to pick the diet, where you can consume the recommended daily allowances of all the appropriate food, whether it's carbs or fat, whatever the case may be, and allows you to remain healthy with a healthy weight and reduce risk for chronic diseases. And you've got to take into account people's preferences and things like this. So this one diet, if I was training a group of athletes, I wouldn't give them all the same training program. They're all unique. You've got to figure out what are the small nuances that really make them tick. And you've got to do the same with human beings as well.
Okay. Just a couple more things. But people wondering, how do they get kids involved in kind of exercise that, as one woman says, without them realizing they're exercising?
Well, that's the key. You got to make it fun. And yeah, we know that our kids develop most of their health behaviors, you know, washing their teeth, washing their hands when they're young. And the most important person for a child developing their health behaviors is their parents. And if you engage with your kids when they're young, it's the best time you'll ever spend in your life. They will be rewarded with a healthy life. So making it fun, regardless of whether you live, you know, in the city or whether you live in the country, it is very important. You find ways to play with your kids. And that's the important word. You know, play is very important to children. It's not exercise. It's not structured. It should be fun for the kids. And if there's parental involvement, the kids get far more satisfaction from their engagement.
Okay. Now, listen, the text flying in, I think people always get a lot out of you. So thank you.
One thing. Yeah, my dad, he's 93. He's in hospital at the moment. I think it's just to get his mojo back again, to get him back out to us living in the real world again. So I'd like just to wish him good luck.
Okay, and good luck to his mojo. Hope come back. Professor Niall Moynagh from DCU School of Health and Human Performance in DCU, thank you very much.